You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. And on today's episode, I'm going to break down the remarkable 2019-20 season of Domantas Sabonis. The Lithuanian center had a career high in really every category in 2019-20. Everything from points per game to rebounds per game to assists per game. He shattered his previous records. He averaged 18.5 points per game on 12.4 rebounds and 5 assists. Previous highs were 14 in points, 9 in rebounds, and 2.9 assists. He averaged a career high in shots at 13.7, shooting 54% on those. Not quite a career high, but still a remarkable season. He had a career high usage rate for him in terms of just how much the ball was played through him. Have usage rate of nearly 23.3%. Set a career high in his box plus minus and tied a career high in win shares. The Lithuanian center went from playing traditionally a backup five to a hybrid of four and five with the bench. Really broke out to lead the bench unit that was the Pacers' maybe best unit all season long. And that's what really pushed him into the All-Star game level. He had a season where you can just see he keeps getting better and better and better each year, right? So he started kind of with Oklahoma City having a very, I would say, below average year for a rookie, but nothing that wasn't like, you know, he still played 20 plus minutes of rookie, which is a ton of minutes for a guy that's only 20 years old. But each year after that, the Pacers, 11 points per game, then 14, then 18, getting better at something every year. His one blemish would be his three-point shot, where he took 1.1 per game, not very many. I think it's a total of about 70 three-point shots the whole year, and only shot 25% of them. And the other thing was he obviously did not play in the playoffs, which I think stalled a little bit of his momentum heading into the 2020-2021 season. But I think Sabonis, in my opinion, was the Pacers' best player last year. I think T.J. Warren has a case during the bubble, but in the pre-bubble games, he was their best player. He was the leader of the team. When he was on the court for the most minutes, they managed to win games. I mean, that's what he did. He was just that good of a player, in my opinion. He recently just signed a four-year extension around. I think it ranges from $18 million the first year, $17.5 million, to about $21 million in the fourth year. I think it ends up being like 4 for 77. A very reasonable contract for a guy who made the All-Star game, borderline top 25 player, maybe top 30. He'll have trouble getting again in the All-Star game again this year just because of, you know, KD being back and Kyrie maybe being 100% healthy all year and Vic being back at some point. But he should still be on that bubble borderline All-Star. You would hope for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons. And I'm excited to see, does he improve something in his game next year? Does he go from 18 points to 22 points? You know, that's the next step, right? He keeps kind of subtly going up and up and up. And, you know, he's going to need to develop something in terms of the three-point shot or whatnot if he's going to, you know, probably take that next level. But I'm excited to see, one, what he does next season, how the new coach, Nate Bjorken, kind of brings him in, what he sees he can do out of him. And I'm interested to see him with the ball in his hands more, because he did flash that towards the end of the year with a couple of triple doubles, I believe one in Denver that was pretty big, and another one later in the year. And he started to flash some ability to kind of play a Jokic light position, which I think is his ultimate destiny if he wants to become, like I said, a top 20 to 15 player in the league and sort of fill the shoes of his father, who you know, was considered one of the greatest Russian players of all time, but never got to the league until he was kind of in his late 30s, so never really was able to show himself in his prime. It's a bonus, you know, a lot of people say right now Nikola Jokic is the kind of embodiment of what Arvydas Sabonis was going to be if he came to the NBA in his prime. Well, Domantas is his actual son, has a chance to kind of step in to his father's shoes in that way. So like I said, I'm going to break down his highs and lows from his last season. And then I will talk about the three lingering questions I have for Sabonis. And there are some obvious ones and there's some tough ones, but I think they're worth discussing. But first, before we get to those two topics, let's talk about our wonderful friends over at Built Go. Whether it's mental or physical, break through that everyday wall with Built Go. It's an easy-to-take 1.5-ounce package that you can put in your briefcase, you can put in your golf bag, or you can just put in your backpack or pocket for the everyday. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling, plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like a monster energy drink with a third of the caffeine and better results, and they come in 3 delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, or chocolate mint. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen proteins. Collagen is a fast-absorbing, so it gets in your system really fast, but it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with all the good stuff to ignite a good workout, everything from B3 to honey and a little kick of caffeine, which you always need in a workout. Trust me, when I'm working out, you always need a little bit of a caffeine just to give you that little motivational boost. And right now, if you go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, you will get 20% off your next order. So go to BuiltGo.com right now, use the promo code LOCKED, and get 20% off your next order. Built Go, let's go. I think the highs of Sabonis' season are pretty easy. I think there's a couple of nice stretches in the season where he went from, you know, he could have like broke a couple barriers, I would say, right? So I think you can take that whole stretch run really from about the fourth game against Brooklyn when he, I think, became the starter because Turner got hurt through, I mean, you could go as far as basically like Christmas where he's averaging. So you go from there to Christmas, he's averaging, I think, somewhere in the mid-20s in points per game, is shooting an incredible, a little bit less, averaging 17.4 points per game, 50% from the field, 13.8 rebounds. Night in, night out, he's, you know, a plus 7.2. Pacers going on a great run there. I think they end up going like something like 19-7 over that 26-game run. And then the next kind of level is really post-New Year's. They go on this West Coast trip on January 19th, and that's when he becomes the kind of passing Sabonis, right? So if you take those stats until they kind of stop playing basketball on March 10th, basically last game, he goes averaging 17 points, 5.2 assists. I believe he has 2 triple-doubles in that range. Maybe I'm missing even a third one that he had. He just kind of jumped, right? He had 3 triple-doubles in that run, a 23-11-10 against Brooklyn, a 27-11-14 against Portland, and then obviously that Denver game. But I think it's his best game of the year where he averaged, 22-15-10. That could be considered the Doug McDermott game at the same time, but I think Sabonis played a really key part in setting up McDermott for a bunch of nice threes at the end of that game. And that was the first time, I think, in that January where I felt like, oh, maybe this Pacer team is actually good enough to win a playoff series. Now, obviously, they didn't this year, and I think a big part of that was him not playing. But I think when they really took Denver, who clearly was a really good team this year, made the conference finals, was one of the best 4 to 6 teams in the league. And I thought at that time was still one of the 4 to 6 best teams in the league at that moment, was I think number 3 seed at that point. He really took it to them, took it to Jokic, and so that kind of opened my eyes to him in some way. And I think it's really hard to find, you know, like a lot of duds from him. I mean, some of the games he didn't play super great, he still shot pretty well, or the team still won, so it didn't really matter. Like he had a bad game against Philly where he only had 10 points and shot 3 of 12, but the team still won by 6. I mean, a couple times where he had like where he got in foul trouble, I think that's kind of where you probably look at where he can improve the most, and that's probably where he sort of came up the worst was, a game against Miami where he was only able to play about 30 minutes, which is about 5 minutes below his average because the foul trouble only put up 8 points. A few of the games where he only played like 27 minutes here or there, but, you just look at his box score and his total numbers and the amount of times he played over 40 minutes, which I think is actually something you don't want to see from next year, but the Pacers really pushed the guy and allowed him to be the guy that carried them. I mean, that's the truth. He was him and Warren carried the team at the year, and Sabonis was, I think, even more important than Warren because of what he did for that bench. I mean, you know, those first, I would say, 3 or 4 games, they struggled off the bench. I mean, they just didn't quite have it figured out. They couldn't quite, whatever it was, couldn't make it work. And then when they finally, you know, Turner came back from injury, they put Sabonis in a staggered lineup with him and then played him with the bench, and something clicked. I mean, that's when something just kind of snapped into place. The team went on this great run, and that bench unit, you know, with a top 5, you know, when you look at, like, the best 5-man lineups, that was a top, you know, 5 to 10 plus minus net ratings, whatever you want to say. It had all the, you know, things and, you know, stats in its favor and whatnot. But he just had a fantastic year. I mean, he was putting up, you know, huge nights. I mean, he never really, I don't think he ever was able to crack 30 points, but it was just a lot of nights of like 25 and 10, 18 and 15s. I mean, it's just, you know, the kind of stuff where I almost want to say you are begging the Pacers other center to put up those kind of numbers, right? You're just like, can he just, the other center just, you know, get 10 rebounds and be a rebounding machine? And Sabonis benefited from obviously playing with the bench unit and having to go against, you know, much lesser or inferior competition on the bench. And I'd love to see what happens if he plays 36 minutes with like constant starters or that, whatever, how that works. But I do think with the new coach, you're probably going to see him in a staggered lineup as well, assuming they don't make a trade. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But, you know, assuming they bring back Turner and Sabonis, I think we'll see a similar, you know, him in a similar position. And, you know, I think a lot of people out there mistake Sabonis year as a situational and not something where he just sort of improved. I mean, he was a much better scorer. I mean, his, you know, he had a really good third year, I thought, with the Pacers. Like, he sort of went up a level that year, playing really the entire time with the bench. But this year, he basically mirrored stats that he had the year before, but increased his minutes by 10, which allowed him to take a few more shots, don't get me wrong, but he kept the efficiency up, and that was key. And he was a better defender this year. You know, I'm not going to say he's some great defender that, you know, you trust in huge moments, but he was getting better, that he was doing better on the perimeter. They were putting him in better spots. And, you know, to me, it's the passing that really got there this year, the passing and the ability, the decision-making when it comes to shots, right? He wasn't just taking a lot of 50, you know, he had a nice little sweet spot where, you know, he could make a 12, 15 footer, but took a lot of shots inside the rim, took a lot of efficient shots that he knew he could make. I mean, you look at his sort of, so shots by distance, he took about half his shots inside 3 feet, shooting 56% on them. Actually, was worse than the year before, where he shot 59 on shot, or sorry, where he shot 74% versus 68%. I'm sorry, I mixed those up. 74% on inside 3 feet 2 years ago versus 68 the year, last year. And he just, he finally figured out that when he gets the 4-on-3 on a pick and roll, that he has like a ton of options, and he's just quick decision maker. He can really set the Pacers up for really good plays. I mean, and he's a really good screen player, whether he actually has the ball in hand or not. He can be in every action, and that's what the Pacers did. They put him in every action. They kind of reminded me, they put him in the Thad Young role in some way, right? I think Thaddeus Young used to be the Pacers' kind of go-to action guy. He could do a little bit of, you know, pick and roll, pick and pop in, all kinds of stuff, or he could sit in the corner, where Sabonis was like, every play, whether it's on the ball or off the ball, he was setting some kind of screen, or he was getting the ball in the post and making a play. For me, obviously, he's got to take that three-point shot and get better at it, but I think that's something he's developing in his game. I don't see, you know, I think each year he brings something different to him. He seems to be, you know, he has some of that, you know, his father was a great NBA player, or a great basketball player. I guess he wasn't a great NBA player because he didn't play very long in the NBA, but a great basketball player, and can learn from him. And so, I don't know, I just have a lot of confidence in Sabonis getting better each year until he gets his prime at 27, 28. Maybe that's, you know, wishful thinking or whatnot, but I do think Sabonis is the Pacers' best player at this moment, and he is the best Pacers have to gain a top 20 player going forward. I think if you told me in three seasons he's one of the best 15 to 20 players because he can, you know, score 22 points, have 12 rebounds, and have 7 assists a game, I would believe it. I mean, I think he's that good and has that much talent, and it just has to put together, right? It needs to be in the situation where he can actually have, you know, I think if you put him in the spot where he had four guards or four shooters around him, he'd be really successful. You saw it with the bench in some way. I know it's really more like three shooters in McConnell, but just three, you know, four perimeter type players around him, he can succeed. And then you put him in a lot of pick and rolls with, whether it's Vic, whether it's Brogdon, whatever, and that's where he's going to succeed the most. At the same time, is he's going to be able to help make those guys better, and he's going to be able to, you know, be the extra passer and whatnot. So, I'm very high on Sabonis, if it isn't clear. I mean, I'm higher than probably most people are. I think maybe even higher than Tony, who I think is very high on Sabonis as well. And so I'm a big fan of him. And so before we, you know, before I just, you know, put too much praise on him, the one thing I will say that I worry about with him the most is his defense. And I'm not sure he ever become a positive defensive player. And that might be the thing that drags him down, right? His perimeter defense is getting better, but it's not all the way there. He's not a rim protector. He's very much an offensive center. Now, we've seen Jokic, who's been able, they've been able to play him in that way and be fine. But I worry that if they sort of build a team where they go too small around him, they create a really bad defense, and that's going to be their detriment, right? I mean, the Pacers have been successful the past three, four, five, two decades, whatever, because they've had a top five defense when they're always really good, right? That's why they win 50-plus games in some of those years, right? When they won 57 with the PG teams and the 61 with the O'Neal teams, it was because they had a top 3-2-1 defense and then a good enough offense to complement it. Maybe not the best. And so they've never had the other way around where they have, you know, a top five offense but not a top five defense. And I just worry that that's just something they can't produce. Even, you know, if Sabonis and Vic and Brogdon and Warren all go to that next step, I just worry that, like, the defense will be so bad that it can't, you know, no offense can make up for how bad the defense would be. But I think that's what we'll have to see. And that's kind of where I want to lead to, where I have my three lingering questions on Sabonis. So let's take one more break, and then we'll do the three most important things on him. So question number one for Sabonis that's lingering to me is, does he get better as a passer or three-point shooter? This is the, we talked about a little bit last segment, but this is the point where if he can improve both those things, he becomes a top 15 player, maybe even, you know, I don't know, could get top 10. There's a lot of good players in the league, so maybe not top 10, but the top 15 player, he's just an all-star. He can improve one of them. He probably gets in the top 20, 25. I think right now I would put him at like probably 30. Did, you know, I think he was an all-star, but I think there are a lot of guys who you could probably find five or six guys you'd put ahead of him, you know, based on, because he didn't make All-Star games because they were rookies or didn't play enough games or whatnot, or they were injured last year. I think, you know, between Zion and Kyrie and Durant, there are at least three guys between 24, and he would slot in three spots. Sabonis, who was, I would say, the, quote, 24th best player last year. He was the last All-Star, I mean, by far, kind of in that Al Horford role from two years ago. But, yeah, if he can get better as a passer or a three-point shooter, which I think he's working on for sure, he has a real chance to sort of elevate his game to a point where he is, you know, the Nikola Jokic light, the Bam Adebayo light. Doesn't quite have the defensive Bam. That's where Bam is much better. But he can become a much better offensive threat than Bam, let's put it that way, and become close Jokic in terms of just, like, offensive output that is, you know, borderline MVP level, borderline, you know, carry team to a championship level. So we'll see what he does there. I mean, he's still young, so he's only 23. The next question, well, I'm going to skip this one for now. So the other one is, well, I kind of need to do this one first before I do the next one, is can he work with Turner? Is it ever going to work with the two of them? I'm highly skeptical it will. However, I'm moving in favor of, if they can't find a great trade for Turner, they're better off running it back. They have both guys under contract for Turner 3, him 4, so there's not, you know, they can always reevaluate next summer, and if it doesn't have a lot of value now, it's not like it's going to get any worse by next year, right? I mean, they don't have a good value this time. I'm not sure it'll get much better or worse. It'll probably stay the same, frankly, because both guys who they are. But, I mean, if Bjorken can somehow unlock Sabonis and Turner together in some way, I mean, he will change the Pacers' fortunes going forward forever. I'm skeptical that can happen, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing it, just because I think McMillan was such a dull offensive play caller. He just wasn't creative when it came offensively, and I think the two of them can work if there is some kind of creative ingenuity on the offensive end. And I think Bjorkgren, at least from what Pritchard is saying and whatnot, is the guy who can do that. I mean, that's why they hired him. They think he's the next great basketball mind, and that's true. He might be able to make the two guys work, or it's all smoke and mirrors right now, and they're just trying to boost up the trade value of one of them to trade. And that's my last question that's lingering with him, and that's, what is his trade value if they decide to move on from him? I think there was a minute there in the playoffs where Turner could have kind of stolen Sabonis's mantle as the Pacers, you know, best center. I think if Turner and the four guards had managed to win a playoff series, you know, Aaron Holiday, TJ Warren, and kind of Warren's guard, Brogdon, and Oladipo, that lineup, had won a playoff series or took the Heat to 7, let's say, or played them really tough, and Turner was this incredible player, not even incredible, but just like, you know, a good, consistent 12-10, you know, 15-8 kind of player who clearly was just dominant defensively and was a good enough offensive player to kind of elevate everybody because they all shoot threes, I would have been more convinced. But as that series went on, I became more and more convinced that Sabonis was the right guy to be that fist, to be that center, and Turner was the right guy to not be out there. But I think Sabonis has a lot of trade value. I think a lot of teams are high on him. I think you could probably yield some kind of first-round pick in some range. I don't know if you get as high as, like, the Warriors' second overall pick, not just the available for a guy like Sabonis, but I think you could yield, you know, a lottery pick for Sabonis. I think he was that good last year. I don't think he's worth – I think he's worth more than that, to be honest. I think he's worth a lottery pick and some kind of role player. But I don't really know why you would trade him. Unless there's like some magical piece I'm missing, right? Like, does he get you Carl Anthony Towns? I don't think Towns is available, but like maybe that's where you do it, right? That kind of level of talent, right? Like, if, like, you told me Anthony Davis is tradable, for Sabonis and a couple of things, I'd say do it tomorrow. But like, that's kind of it, because I think, like I said, I think he's the kind of guy who has a ton of potential to be, you know, a top 15 to 20 player. And it's, you just don't trade those guys unless you can get a top 5 or 10 player. And that's still an if. I mean, that's still a major if, because what if Sabonis becomes a top 10 player, right? What if he can become that good? And frankly, I don't see the right fit for him or whatnot out there. I don't see the right trade package that makes the Pacers worth it. Like, if they trade him, they're basically saying we're blowing it up, right? I mean, I think, you know, he complements Oladipo and Brogdon in a really, really good way. So if you're trying to keep both those guys happy, and obviously Brogdon and Carter, but trying to keep Vic happy, you want Spencer to kind of be his body man, the guy who can set picks for him and get him in a pick and roll or a screen handoff or something where gets, you know, Oladipo an action that doesn't involve him just dribbling around like a nut for, you know, 24 seconds so he, you know, throws up a crazy back foot shot or tries to go to the rim when he can't keep the ball in his hands, right? So Bonus can sort of give him the space, create some stuff for him in a way no other player on the Pacers really can. So I just think trading Sabonis is kind of crazy. But, I mean, if you really can get something great for him, I think you go ahead and do it. But I don't know. I think you're better off either got to try them both or trade Turner. I mean, I don't think Sabonis is the guy you should trade. But that's just my humble opinion. I do not make decisions for the team, obviously. I am just a podcast host. Like always, you can listen to us and me and Tony, as Tony East, on this podcast four or five days a week now that we're in off-season mode. I believe Tony's bringing a special Wednesday podcast looking into the Gordon Hayward trade possibilities with Locked On Celtics host John Corrales. Hope I'm not giving that away, but that should be a very exciting podcast. I look forward to listening to that one, so you guys can listen to that one tomorrow on this feed. We should have another player review for you later this week, and then we'll kind of keep that series going, and we'll kind of kick into draft coverage and off-season mode soon enough. The NBA and the MBPA are still figuring out, you know, when to start next season, but I said that we're getting either a December or January start date, which means we're close no matter what, right? I mean, if it's MLK, it's only, you know, 2.5 months away, you know, 10, 11 weeks. So we're getting close to NBA season, which is really exciting because, you know, I know we didn't have it for about, what, 6 months there, 5 months there, and then we got it back for just a short little while. But I'm excited for like a full season and a full season of healthy Vic and a full season of all these guys together and the new coach. It should be exciting. So kind of stay with us through this offseason. We'll kind of take you through everything we can this offseason so you can figure out what's going on with this team, what's going to happen, whatnot. And then we'll start up with games and we'll bring you our daily gamers and stuff like that. And so you can, you know that the team in and out. That's kind of what we do here on the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, me, FreedomAdam5, my co-host Tony East at TEastMBA. That is all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again tomorrow.